תפילת שמנחה תתיר צרורה. אלף בגימל יוטב צבי. These six letters have a gematria of 506, which is the same as the Hebrew phrase Ahavatinam, unconditional love. And we learn from this that this first verse is relating to unconditional love, loving kindness, the energy of Chesed. Kabel Rinat Amcha Sagbeinu Tacharenu Nora. These six letters spell two Hebrew words, Pra Satan, tear up Satan. And the same six letters can be rearranged to spell Sha'ar Katan, which means small gates, and remind us to guard our gates, our eyes, ears, nose, and mouth, which are the entry points for the negative system. Nagibor Dorshe Yehudcha Kevavat Shamrem Nun Gimel Dalet Yud Kaf Shin. Nun Gimel Dalet has a gematria of 57, which is the Hebrew word parnasa for parnasa, don. And Yud Kaf Shin is a healing sequence that allows us to take any part of our body that needs healing back to its stem cell state, where it can be cleansed, where it can be healed, where it will become rejuvenated, and then return it to the body as it is meant to be, again doing its job as it was created to do. Barachem tacharem rachamem Tami Gamlem Betet Resh Tzadi Tav Gimel. The letters of the month of Av, the Kaf that created this planet we call the Sun, and the Tet that created the constellation Aryeh, the lion. And together the Kaf and the Tet have a gematria of 29, which is the same as the Hebrew word kozev, which means to bind together, to unify. Chasim kadosh berov tufa na eladata etfus bet tet onayin. This sequence connects us to the Sefirah of Chod and its attribute of appreciation and thankfulness. Yachid Geye Lamcha Pnei Zofre Kedushata Yud Gimel Lamed Hei Zayin Kuf. This sequence connects us to the Sefirah of Yesod, which and its attribute of creation, sexual energy, passion. Shabbatenu kabel ushma tziyakatenu yodea talumot shin kufav zadi yutav. The first two letters of the sequence have a gematria of 400, representing the four worlds, with 10 sephirot within 10 sephirot. The last four letters have a gematria like the first verse of 506. And so we learn that the path to completion, which is the 400, the path to completion is through the injection of unconditional love in every step in our way. The idea of doing actions of sharing without an expectation of receiving return, without an agenda. And the eighth verse of the Anabaptist, we say in a whisper, which grounds any excess energy that we don't have the vessels to handle. Now I'm going to read a verse from the Zohar, from the prologue of the Zohar. Verse 98 in section 12, the donkey driver. L'shem yichud kud shabarifu ishkinte birkilu urchimu urchimu urchilu le'achta shem yudke v'vavte v'yichuda shalim v'shem kol Yisrael limud Torah mitzvah v'yihi no'am Adonai Eloheinu aleinu ma'aseh yadinu k'nanei aleinu ma'aseh yadinu k'nanehu v'yom ha'sheleg v'yom ha'digarnu Kolvin v'dina, idan le'ela, me'im be'dina, ila'a v'yalda, k'tiv lo tira, l'veita mishaleg, da'dina ila'a. Amai begin deko beta, lavushanim v'yakel, L'mispal esha takifa ad kan raza digra. In a day of snow describes a day when the sins caused the sentence, the judgment to be pronounced by the court on high. Therefore it is written, she is not afraid of the snow, which symbolizes the judgment on high, which is called the snow. Why is she not afraid? Because all her household are clothed with scarlet. This is how she can endure the strong fire. Up to this point, the secret of the verse is not revealed. Are there any questions? Snow comes from water, correct? Ice comes from snow, or comes from water also. What's the difference between the two essences? One is strict judgment. Ice is strict judgment. Snow is sweeping judgment. It's still judgment, but it's not as severe. I'm sorry? It's moderated. It's not necessarily moderate, but it's moderated. Now, the idea, who is she? She is the Shekhinah. The Shekhinah is from God, from the female aspect of God. When the Shekhinah is dressed in red, meaning judgment, she can handle soft judgment. That's what the verses say. And in the it quotes a verse from the Torah, from I believe it's Samuel, where it says, as it says, in a day of snow. Every day has some judgment and some mercy. But when the judgment is ameliorated, if it's sweetened, it's a day of snow. It's just a metaphor that the Torah uses that people don't understand because they're reading it literally. Any other questions? I'm going to move that down because I'm hearing a little bit. But we should appreciate the buzzing going on in the background from the... It's from the stove.
Yes.
The timer won't turn off.
Really?
He's
doing that Friday night?
Yeah. It's been doing it for 3 days, Baruch Hashem.
Then
I don't know if anybody reported it. I personally did not report it. Today's class, as announced, is sickness and healing. Sickness and health. So let's understand some history that comes from the Midrash about Abraham and about Jacob. Abraham and Isaac are representative of two sefirot, the loving-kindness, chesed, and gevurah, judgment. There are polar opposites. One is love, and one is holding back that love, putting a restriction on that love. In the physical world, the Midrash says that Abraham looked exactly like Isaac in such a way, even though Isaac was his son, Abraham didn't age. And so at 110 or 120, he looked like Isaac at 20. People couldn't tell them apart. And Abraham prayed to the Creator and asked that he be shown that his physical appearance be differentiated between his son, because it wasn't fair. Isaac, if he always looked like his father, would never stand on his own. People would always be comparing him to his father. So Abraham, in his mercy and his consciousness of what would be better for his son, asked that he start to age. That's why people age.
It's his fault. Oh, my God.
I wouldn't say it's his fault. It's his cause. Because as you look at what is aging, not the illnesses that come with aging, but people who age, their hair turns white, indicating they've become more merciful. They're more aware of love. They're less reactive to anger. They're less reactive. They've learned some patience. Not necessarily all the patience they need, but some patience. So older age is the effect of that prayer from Abraham. And it's a good thing. Now people don't think it's a good thing in our society. They're constantly striving to look younger, not to age. Women spend how much money on cosmetics to fix? They'll go to skin doctors and all the rest. Men do it too. It's not just women. But it's not understanding what is the purpose of aging. The purpose of aging is to manifest the additional loving kindness that you have learned in your life process. Now, Jacob came along and he lived his life as the Torah describes it. He had a difficult life. He was constantly at war with his brother Esau. And then he was constantly in conflict with his father-in-law, Laban. And when he finally came back to the land of Israel and healed with his brother Esau, he didn't really heal, but he healed. It says that Jacob settled. And the Midrash says that God heard that idea, that if Jacob felt, I've had a difficult life. I've done my spiritual work. I brought the 12 tribes into the world. I've taught them what I can teach them. It's time for me to rest. God says, you're in the physical world. Do you want to rest? I'll show you what rest means. So the next thing you know is the story of Dinah, who was raped by Shechem. And right after that, Joseph, his favorite son, whatever that means, is sold into slavery into Egypt. This is rest. When you stop doing your spiritual work, the universe is going to try and wake you up. Jacob, realizing that error, is now in Egypt. having all of his children and all of his grandchildren surrounding it. What a wonderful feeling. And he is saying to God, and he prays to God, let me have a sign that it's time for me to leave so that I can prepare my children and my grandchildren. I can make arrangements for whatever it is I need to make arrangements for. And God grants this request because he considers it good. People should have an opportunity to know when they are leaving so that they can prepare. Now, in this society, that means getting a will, buying a funeral, plot, and various other things. But in Jacob's time, it's blessing his children. It's reaching out and explaining to them what he thinks their process, their spiritual work is all about, helping them to understand that. This leads into the idea of sickness, because that's the sign. Prior to that prayer, people would be walking along and they'd sneeze. And when they sneeze, their soul would go out through their nose and leave their body. And they died. With Jacob's prayer, they had a sign, and that sign is illness. And this kind of illness, its purpose is to wake you up that it's time that you're leaving. But we live in a time and in a generation where that's no longer necessary. We have a choice whether to leave or not. Most people don't accept that. As often as I say it, as much as I know it to be true, remember, never believe a word I say, but discover this for yourself. And how can you do that? We'll come back to that later in the class, Bezrat Hashem. So people get sick as an indication that it's time to make your plans, make the transition. That illness, that sickness cannot be healed. In our generation, even that can be healed, because we don't have to leave. But then there's another kind of illness that has been true all along. And that is an illness that happens throughout life. It's telling you, wake up. You have done some actions that are not considered positive. Wake up. You need to do teshuvah for these actions that you have done. Wake up. So what does that tell me? I got sick. I go to the doctor. And the Torah tells us to go to the doctor. Does the doctor tell me what I did wrong?
What does the Torah say for the doctor?
In the Talmud it says there's a question on whether you're supposed to depend on God to heal you,
right,
or to use the tool of God, which is a doctor. So what is this whole issue? We live in an age of medical technology that, in comparison to 200 years ago, 100 years ago, is absolutely amazing. We have people with cholesterol problems. They take certain heart medicines, and it actually heals the arteries and the veins. Medicines do amazing things. Technologies, surgeries, various things. The chiropractic side, the acupressure, acupuncture, all of these tools that have been around forever have become aware and structured in this society. You have all these choices of what kind of medicine you wish to utilize. But none of them are effective unless you do a form of teshuvah. Because if you have a wake-up call that says you did X, Y, Z, and you go to the doctor and he gives you a medical technology and it heals, will it come back? Unless you do teshuvah, it's guaranteed to come back because you haven't changed. Now, let's use cancer as an example. We've all known or heard of people who have had spontaneous remission. It went away. Doctor diagnosed it as cancer. 3 months later, it went away. What did the person do? The person changed. The person started to eat healthy. The person started to handle things differently. Various forms of change in their lifestyle, in their life structure. And that change dealt with the spiritual cause of the particular cancer. And it was remission. It was spontaneous remission. It went away. How come it doesn't happen with everybody? Because the cause of the disease is the spiritual action that soul did. And we need to know who that soul is from their previous lifetime. We need to know what they did in this lifetime. And we need to have that understanding in order to assist them. Because they're the only ones who can create spontaneous remission. And there are sickness comes in all forms and sizes and shapes. Yet, it really boils down to the consciousness of the person who became sick. What is those four levels of consciousness that they might have? There are people who know that the Creator is their healer and will be healed through their change, their teshuvah, their returning to the Creator. That's the highest level. Then there are people who know that the Creator is their healer, but know that they need an assistant. They need the medical technology to help them heal. They cannot do it themselves is their mindset. They need that assistance. That's the next lower level. Then there is the healing. There's somebody who gets sick that doesn't think that the Creator can heal them, but the doctor can. And they go to the doctor expecting the doctor to heal them. And sometimes it does. Sometimes it doesn't. And then there's the fourth person who goes to the doctor, doesn't think the Creator can heal them or will heal them, goes to the doctor, but is only willing to change or spend the money that they can afford. They're not willing to spend everything to stay alive. They don't really have this strong desire to live. This is the lowest level of people who become sick. What is the purpose of any form of illness? It's a wake-up call to the person who became sick. They did something wrong. How can they know what they did? Our bodies are formed as a mirror of God. What is God? God is the tree of life. God is the 10 Sephirot. We are a mirror of the 10 Sephirot. In the third class, I gave you a chart called the Tikkun HaNefesh, the correction of the soul. In that, you have the Tetragrammaton with different vowels, all related to different Sephirot. Where did you have pain? Where did you get illness? What is the diagnosis? If a student comes to me with these things, I send them to the doctor because we live in a generation where the information is available. We can take an x-ray, an MRI, or whatever the technology is today. And it will show us where in the body is this illness. And it will tell us by where in the body, what is the action that you did, which sephirah did you damage. Now, the first time you did that action, your body didn't get sick. If you're a truly, ultimately righteous person, the smallest negative action, you'll get a pain. So that you know. Because you're asking the question, why did I have this pain? Why did I get a headache this side of my head, not that side of my head? The righteous people ask this question. They know. They look for what is their cause of that pain, because the cause is always spiritual. Once you understand that it's spiritual, the fact that I have a physical pain, a physical illness, number one, it's late in the process because you had all kinds of other signs. We have in the Torah, it talks about the illness of leprosy. It's translated as leprosy, but it also says that leprosy first comes in your home, on the buildings, on your possession. You knocked over a vase. It's an indication that there is some negative aspect, because there should have been an angel there to catch it if you actually knocked it over. Why wasn't the angel there? Because you blocked it with that spiritual action that you did. Now, after that, if you didn't wake up from that notice, it will come on your body. But it will come on your body in an area where your clothes cover it. Nobody else can see it. And then it will progress. And it will all of a sudden show up in parts of your body that the clothes don't cover. And that clothes can't cover. Because right now I'm wearing a short sleeve shirt. I can get something on my arm. But I can wear a long sleeve shirt and cover it up. But how do I cover up something on my nose? Or on my forehead? Yes, I can wear bangs, but it's not good for a man to wear bangs per se. Just I'm using those as examples. There is a progression of knowledge, of signs, but most people don't know that these are the signs. They don't pay attention to it. I sit in a chair today, a wheelchair today. I have arthritis of the right hip. Why did I have that? Oh, I have genes that make it easy to have that, but that's not the cause. Gene is a physical issue. The spiritual action that I did, I have yet to understand. But I guarantee there were signs leading up to that that I ignored. And as soon as I understand that, I'll be up out of the chair. I'll be able to walk. I have that certainty. The question is, what do you do when you become ill? Number one, you need to know that it's far down the path. You missed a lot of signs that you could have done teshuvah earlier. But as you learn what part of the body, it's easier to understand those signs. What sephirah did you do? And then the question is, I know what sephirah, but what action did I do? Because someone else has damaged the same sephirah, but did a different action than I did. Because their previous life, they had a different path than I did. Different mistakes that I made. You need to go to a student of Kabbalah. You need to go to a Kabbalist. Today, we don't have Kabbalists of the caliber that are revealed to us. They're there in the world, but they're concealed. The Kabbalists, the students of Kabbalah that are available, people like me teaching, the Kabbalah Center, the B'nai Baruch group, all of these people are not Kabbalists in the traditional sense of 200 years ago. In our generation, 20 years ago, you went to the Rebbe of Chabad, who stood up for 9 hours, 10 hours a day on Sundays, passing out dollar bills. And people would line up, and every Sunday he gave away $10,000-$15,000, meaning 10 or 15,000 people went through his line. And what did they do? Rebbe blessed me. And he would listen, and he'd say, "Here, take this dollar and be my mashliach, be my messenger to give this to charity for me." And those who did it received their blessings. Those who merited it received their blessings. And people will talk about it, and you can read all kinds of stories of how amazing the blessing from the Rebbe was. And others will say, "I've read this story, and it's just, that's the way the world works sometimes. It's coincidence." You have the choice. Which way do you want to see things? Which way do you want to perceive truth? Is it coincidence? Or was this man on a caliber of soul that he could bless you and it would manifest? That God had delegated the world, the control of the physical world, to him and people like him, the Baba Sali in Israel, and other people, both in America and in Israel. God had delegated the control of the physical world to these people. Well, we don't have people of that caliber anymore. And yet people still get sick. And you can still go to a student of Kabbalah, the Kabbalah Center, the B'nai Baruch, myself, other people who've been taught how to understand what tools and techniques to utilize so that you know what your illness is and help you understand what spiritual action you did that needs to be done to shuva. Now, I'm going to start to give you some examples from my own life, from my students' lives, to help you understand how this works. In the earlier class on binding by striking, I spoke about myself getting a headache and asking for more pain and never having a headache since. It's now going on 20 years. That's one technique. What's another technique? I was diagnosed with colon cancer. Colon cancer is a slow-growing cancer, but people die from colon cancer. My mother died from colon cancer. It's in the genes. My children are supposed to start getting their colonoscopies at the age of 40 because of this history of two generations. What did I do? I didn't panic. I'm lying on the first colonoscopy of my whole life. I'm lying on that cart, on that bed. The doctor comes in and says, "I'm sorry to tell you, I found something that looks like unusual. We're going to have to get a biopsy on it, get it tested. But I think it looks like cancer." Now, what do you do when you get that kind of diagnosis? You can be reactive. You can be frightened. My response was, "Thank you for such good news, doctor. I appreciate that you told me this. Now I'll know how to solve it. If you hadn't told me, I wouldn't know about it." doctor looked at me and says, "Are you crazy?" He didn't say it, but I could see it in his mind. Baruch Hashem. So I started to do my spiritual work. I didn't know what causes colon cancer. And then I asked a dream question. What causes colon cancer? And I got an answer. Everything having to do with the digestive system, from your teeth, down the esophagus, the stomach, the small and large intestine, all of that has to do with separating between good and evil. Because what do you do with your digestive system? You take food that has good parts and not so good parts and horrible parts and evil parts, and you separate. And what comes out the rectum is waste. There's nothing good in it. It's good for certain animals and certain insects. They can utilize that, but we can't. So, with that understanding, I started to look at what my life was doing. And I was not doing the Havdalah ceremony, the Havdalah ritual. So I started to do it. I confirmed with a dream question that this is what I needed to do to cure it. And I started to do Havdalah. Now, I knew I had been cured. I knew that I had spontaneous remission. But I live with, not that I live with, but my children care about. My children do not live by my lifestyle. They don't yet follow the path of Kabbalah. They're both very spiritual people, but this is a little too crazy for them, a little cuckoo Kabbalah for them. So when I said to them, "It's cured, I don't need to have the operation recommended," they both freaked out. They both were frightened. I cared about my children. I can't leave them in this frame of uncertainty for two reasons. One is it causes them pain. But there's a more immediate selfish reason. Their thoughts, their words, their discussions with their friends are words that can manifest. And if I'm vulnerable to it, it will manifest in my life. So I went and I had the operation 6 weeks after the diagnosis. Doctor went in. They do arthroscopic surgery now. They put a light in. They put a camera in. He couldn't find it. Oh, it must be on the other side. I must have gotten turned around. Gets out, opens up another hole, puts it in again. Can't find it. Well, I have to take something out as long as I'm here. He cut something out.
What?
Who knows? Part of my intestine he cut out. 6 months later, I'm healed. I'm back to work. Everything's going fine. And I coughed. But out pops three big hernias. It's a very normal thing for modern medicine. But I know the reason that I have these hernias comes from my not willing to trust Hashem and find a way to get my children to not be frightened. I have been cancer-free for 10 years. Bli ayin hara. I do Havdalah. I understand the spiritual cause of that kind of cancer. But what about something else? I have a student 3 years ago. The doctor diagnosed her with uterine cancer. Sir, anybody know about uterine cancer? It's very fast moving, fast growing. and it's immediate death. And the only thing that they recommend is to do a hysterectomy for both the ovaries and the womb, and many times even the cervix. My student is a holistic person. Her whole life, she has lived a holistic life. So why is she getting cervical cancer? Why is she getting uterine cancer? The doctor gave her 3 months to live. Because it's rapid. She said to the doctor, I'm not having the hysterectomy. You're not doing this to me. I had been teaching her for about a year at that time. She called me up and she said, what do I do? I do not want the hysterectomy. Now, I do not practice medicine. So you need to understand, I'm not putting myself at risk by saying, don't get the hysterectomy. She made that decision. If she had asked me, I would have told her to get the hysterectomy. Because there's a reason you live in this kind of society that has this technology available. But she had made that decision. I am not going to have it. How do I lengthen my life? The doctor's given me 3 months. What do I do? I said, you have to do teshuvah. We have to find out the cause of why you're having a problem in your female organs. She asked the dream question. I speak to her once a week for the last 3 years. What's going on, what she's working at. She still has the tumor. She's done teshuvah. The tumor is doing there. Unfortunately, she has what she calls heavy flow, 2 to 3 weeks out of the month. My mother had that before her hysterectomy. Back in the 50s and 60s. So I don't understand it. I'm male. I don't understand it. But I help her identify the areas of what was causing her problem. And she arrived at a point, an understanding of her self-image as a woman, where she hated being a woman. We've all known women who feel that way underneath, deep within themselves. Hopefully not anybody at this table, and hopefully not anybody else in the world. And there's a lot of work going on with young girls to help them overcome this societal aspect. But she absorbed it. She comes from a Hispanic culture. Very much machismo, very masculine oriented, and she hated being a woman. But she went to work on it. And she's now 3 years into the process. She's working on it. And as I said, she still has the tumor, but it's shrinking. She still has the tumor, it's not there. The doctor gave her 3 months, and we're going on 3 years. Teshuvah is not an easy process, but it is the only way to be sure that any illness you have is over and never comes back. Does anybody have any questions?
Tell us a story, a rich story, where people have, healed themselves. While they're in the hospital, I do think really that my Wi-Fi every day,
mm-hmm.
good energy,
mm-hmm.
and so forth.
It's a form of teshuvah. It's a form of change. They didn't do it beforehand. Here's a woman who was doing it beforehand, and she still came down with this disease. Why? Because deep within her, in her previous lives, she was dealing with this attitude about being female. Now, how did she handle that? In the process, she remembered being a five-year-old child and being raped by an uncle, being abused by another man, and by actually wasn't. It was a nephew who was 13. But she, how did she come to terms with that? She had this deep-seated anger. And yet, that deep-seated anger was addressing and focusing on being female. We worked on it. I'm not saying it was easy work. For me, it was very easy. I could tell her what to do. But she had to do the work. She had to come to terms with her life. That's spiritual work.
I'm all going to take the best curiosity.
She's 3 years into the process. Yes, Albert.
I guess what you say, but I'll be partial. I'm still open.
Okay.
Like on an issue like cervical cancer. I know that if you talk to, say, surgeons, cancer surgeons, they're very aware that this is. And I've heard what one of the reasons for cervical cancer is why it's more common is that in this feminist age, women have decided, I don't have to be married now.
I'll play around. But again, you're looking at a physical cause.
I mean, I
can't accept that.
Right.
What's the spiritual cause for that woman to saying, I want to go out and experiment?
But just like you said, someone abused her as a child. That will cause her to go out.
And again, why did she have that experience as a child?
Okay.
What? Well, she was a child. She's not at fault, right? But what did she do in her previous lifetime? What were her parents doing? Because when you really understand cause and effect, a child is the cocoon of the parents until the age of 13. 12 years and a day for a girl and the 13th birthday for a boy. Those 13 years, the child, whatever happens to the child is a function of the cocoon of the parent. So you want to know, a child comes down with an earache. Parents are fighting. Physical causes, but it's really related to their
child.
And on and on. As if you look for spiritual causes instead of stopping and accepting physical causes, that you get an explanation from a doctor or a scientist or a society, whatever. If you look for the spiritual cause, you will find it. But it will be applicable to that person. It's not going to be every person who hates themselves as a woman is going to end up with uterine cancer or cervical cancer. They're going to end up with the process of something they did, something that's from their previous life or within this life that they have to relate to.
I just think that just being brought to physical process, that's mostly based on information.
Yes. Yes.
And some people say the individual is out of harmony with the universe.
That is an explanation that people keep thinking it's spiritual, but it's really physical. And that relates to their previous life.
Everyone seems to have a weak voice.
Yes.
And that's what people say, oh, it's genetic.
The genetic is physical.
I have a weak voice.
I have a propensity to colon cancer.
Right.
I have that gene.
You have the weak organ, but you have to have the physical manifestation of the cancer.
If I had been doing Havdalah all along, I wouldn't come down with that cancer. I wouldn't need the wake-up call.
So would that wake-up call be why you do it more Havdalah?
I started to do Havdalah again because I had stopped.
Maybe that's a symbol of doing Abdallah the right way, of doing your whole spiritual path the right way, making little corrections. So
absolutely.
So it's not just Abdallah.
For me, it was Abdallah. Does that mean that 10 years from now, I'll still be doing Abdallah, but now they're going to say you have a, need to have a better Kavanah? Who's to say? I'll experience what I experience.
What about, like, for instance, you know, people that can actually, older people, like I have aunts and uncles, they were married since they were like 18 and they were 16, and he had died from ductal cancer, and I think she willed herself to die like 2 weeks later. People can do that.
Anyway. Of course.
Yeah.
Absolutely, and one of the signs of a soulmate is that within a year of the husband dying, the wife will die.
Right.
That's an indication of soulmates.
Okay.
Yes.
If a child is molested at 5 or 7 years old, 6 years old, Is the reason that something happened in child past life?
Typically, when you're talking about children being molested,
yes.
You're talking about females, correct?
Yes.
Although males are molested as well. But when it comes to a female, you have to understand the process of male and female and reincarnation. When a woman dies, she goes to Gehinnom and is cleansed. She does not have to reincarnate for her actions. That's not true in this generation, but in previous generations. When she died, she was cleansed in Gehinnom and went to the Garden of Eden and lived there, existed there. She then has a choice when her soulmate, her lesser half action, goes back and has to be reincarnated. She looks at the totality of his sins. And she knows that if she comes into the world cleansed as she is in the Garden of Eden, there will be absolutely no affinity between that man and her. There is no possibility of them coming together. In fact, she will never find any man in this world. So she accepts a portion of his sins that become her tikkun. But she is always slightly higher spiritually than he. To start.
He's older than she.
By a number of years, usually.
Yes.
But it isn't always that case.
And she tried to help me get off of drugs or alcohol or something like that, if that's his thing.
Don't go into that.
Yeah,
understand,
right.
She accepted certain things
right.
from him in order to cleanse so that he could, the process can be speeded up because there's two people doing the work.
But she's a child and she doesn't even know.
Oh, you see her as a child? I
yeah.
see her as a soul who had a lifetime last time. And
okay.
she's accepted things that he has to cleanse.
He has to cleanse by doing that to her?
No.
Why is the burden
you're missing,
on the woman?
You're misunderstanding the point.
Okay.
It's not that the burden is on the woman. She has accepted this as her tikkun in this lifetime.
Why is she so cleansed that she can go directly to the Garden of Eden?
Because she is connected to Bina, because that's what happened when Eve was separated from Adam. They were created back-to-back,
yeah.
equal. Eve was separated from Adam and injected with the consciousness, the level, higher level of Bina. She is higher. That's the reality. Now, this 5-year-old is a soul that has a tikkun.
Right.
And part of that tikkun is to receive, God forbid, this kind of molestation and then deal with its effect as part of the cleansing. That is her tikkun that she has accepted from him. What did he do in his last lifetime that it has to be? It'll be varied from each individual woman. But she is doing this out of love of people, because by doing it, she speeds the process of the Mashiach coming. In one sense, she provides an opportunity for this man's soul, man-child, or man
child.
Who's doing this. She provides an opportunity for him to say, no, I won't do it. I'm causing you harm. I'll stop. Yes, I have this desire, but I won't do it.
She died. Too much like
that. All of the... You have to look at each individual situation and understand it from the tikkun of that soul. There is no generalizations. In a few weeks, we're going to have a class called Relativity, where you will learn in much more detail the idea of nothing is fixed. There's no general idea here. When it comes to an individual, you're talking about a soul and a soul path going back many lifetimes, and each of those paths is unique to those souls.
So we have two souls, the 5-year-old girl and the 11-year-old boy.
And that's not their soulmates.
They're soulmates?
They're not.
They're not soulmates.
They're not soulmates.
Right.
The 5-year-old girl, her male soul, the worst half, has a tikkun with that 11-year-old boy, man-child. And so when she has accepted that experience, she has it with that man-child.
She didn't really accept it. Well, I guess she did.
She did. Before you come down into this world, you see what's going to happen.
Okay.
And you can even say, no, I don't want to have to come down. Women are able to say, I don't want to come. And they can stay up.
And they can stay there?
No, men have to come. This is all part of the reincarnation. I did mention it at the time. If I didn't, I apologize. The last class on reincarnation.
Yeah.
But you hear what you hear, you know. And I say what I think is appropriate, or what is really being drawn through me for things to be known. Eventually, you hear everything. You'll learn everything. But how many lifetimes will
that
take?
You only live to be 15.
For a Hashem. What does that tell you?
What does that tell
you? Remember what we said? Why do people die?
They expect to.
There's three reasons people die.
Okay.
They achieve their tikkun. They reached the end of their life, and somebody who's 15 didn't reach the end of his life. And through God's mercy, if he were to continue to stay in the world, he would become more and more covered and more negativity, more negative actions, and it would be that much more difficult for him to achieve his tikkun. So he's taken out of the world for that reason.
He was born in that day, 1940s, as a blue baby, what they called the blue baby. He was blue.
Yeah, I know. Those were the days before the technology allowed them to say.
Exactly.
Again, you have to look at the individuals. But it's really not a question of who did that. Who was the boy? The question is, what did the male part of that girl soul, that she accepted this cleansing, what did he do that he had this tikkun with that child that had to take place? And at this point, you know, it depends on, you know, how a woman deals with these issues, you know, and that did she manifest it like my student? She manifested it with hatred for being feminine, of not being strong enough, and all of these kinds of feelings? Or did she manifest it by understanding what's taught in Kabbalah?
I didn't there was no understanding.
Not as a 5-year-old, but as a 50-year-old looking back on it, you can understand it. And you can come to terms with it. And you can do teshuvah for being, allowing yourself to be in that situation.
When you say come to terms, do you mean just accept it? Do you say come to terms?
There are many different levels, but it's a form of teshuvah. Not just accept it, but to change it so that it actually never happened. All of that is capable. That's what teshuvah is about. We discussed that a few weeks ago, and we'll discuss it many times again. Because we don't hear, we don't learn everything at once in these classes.
Yes, it was me. And
no, it was you and many women.
Yeah. And I was confused, and I don't know why I didn't say anything, but I never said anything.
Because you were embarrassed, because you were fearful.
I was so little.
Because you didn't know what your parents would say. Would they believe you? Wouldn't they believe you?
And even
all
my mother's son.
Yeah. Exactly.
There's no biological connection to me.
I understand. And I'm sorry you had the experience. And if you want to talk about it privately, we will.
It wasn't anything here. That it was molestation.
As the scientists say today, rape is about violence. It's not about sex. It's about control and hatred and all kinds of other emotions.
I guess he was very angry because he was so sick.
And he was also angry because this little girl came into his life and took away his mother's time.
That's right.
But that doesn't make it right. Okay? But that's not the point.
Okay.
Once you understand that you accepted this, not because you did anything, but because you accepted it, it will help and make it easier for you to handle the emotions associated with this.
I do remember being relieved when he died.
Mm-hmm.
I remember riding my bicycle and thinking, free. Thank you.
Did you ever wish him death?
I don't think so. But what did you do?
How many children have you heard who wished somebody in their life to die, and they think they're in that control, and that's why the person died? But once they come to understand Kabbalah, they get thought in Kabbalah, their thought didn't kill that person.
Right. No, but did they get a sense of thinking that or saying it out loud?
Yes.
That was my question.
They will have to cleanse that.
I do remember thinking, I'm free. Thank God. I'm not going to be
bothered again.
Yeah.
Which is, we get back to this idea of hatred for no reason that we mentioned the other day. We've been mentioning this morning also. What is hatred for no reason? It's when you think better of him than me. Thank God he's dead. I'm not. I'm alive. I'm not saying it's wrong. It's very human. But we didn't come into this world to be human.
Right.
We came into this world to grow to be divine. Whatever that means to each soul.
And I had lost my mother at a year and a half.
Which you haven't recovered from yet.
No. I have no memory. I wish I did.
So it's hard to mourn it without a memory, right?
Yes. That's,
I think, key.
My memory starts when my
part of your tissue was to invite your mother into your meditations. And when she comes, ask her why she died.
Biological mother, yes, I want to know.
Those things are all available. Just because someone dies doesn't mean they're not available to you. But in our physical world, we're never taught that. And if you start to think or say that to your parents as a 3 or 4 or 5-year-old, they're going to poo-poo it. They're going to try and take it out of you. And they do.
Yes.
Any other questions? Have I bothered you too much today? I see you contemplating more so than you.
I'm just letting my own
situation. Prohibition.
I didn't speak to you like that.
And I understand. But be aware that as a student of Kabbalah, which is what I describe myself as, I am a student of Kabbalah. As a teacher, I am available to each and every one of my students, and all of you are my students. All who listen to the recording are my students. I'm available to help you with these individual issues. I'm not a therapist. I do things very different than a therapist does them. And ultimately, the healing that will take place is up to you, not me.
Would it be a sin if I bring an axe next Sunday? Just take it against that oven.
I do want to stop the conference call the recording.
You don't want that.